I'd like to introduce our candidates right next to me here. You have Alderman Sophia King. Next to her, State Representative Cam Buckner. One more down, Alderman Roderick Sawyer. And finally, last but not least, community activist Jamal Green. Thank you all for being here. We are going to, these are the rules we're going to be working under. We're going to do an opening statement. You'll each have 2 minutes for that. This is our lovely clock. When you run out of time, it turns red. You have 2 minutes for an opening statement. Then Santita and I will start asking you questions. You will have 75 seconds to answer each question. If a candidate names another candidate by name, calls somebody out about something they don't like or something that they said or did, then that person gets 30 seconds to rebut. Just wave at me if you think I didn't notice that you were mentioned and you want to have your 30 seconds for a rebuttal. And we're going to try to keep it to time as much as possible. I will kind of cut you off if you run too far past your time. So let's get started with opening statements. Again, you get 2 minutes for this. The countdown is there. Alderman King.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sophia King. I'm running for mayor because I love the city. However, we're at a pivotal point. There's too much dissension between this administration and, quite frankly, everyone. The police, the teachers, my colleagues who are speaking with their feet. We definitely need a mayor who leads with collaboration and not confrontation. I've been able to show this over the last 6.5 years as alderman, where I led the fight for a $15 minimum wage that brought 400,000 people, mainly black and brown women, out of poverty. I'm also leading the former Michael Reese development, now called Bronzeville Lakefront, that shows that you can have both the developers see an upside and the community see an upside with a $25 million commitment to schools, a commitment to 20% affordable housing on site. We also need a mayor who understands how to represent the entire city. I represent from downtown to Hyde Park, with Bronzeville in the middle, some of the best amenities in the city, Grant Park, Soldier Field, Northerly Island, Museum Campus, 5 times as much lakefront as anyone else. But the number one request I get, no matter where I am, is for more police presence. Now, we know that police aren't the only response to this violence. We know that we need to put money into violence prevention, and that's why I have a plan to put hundreds of millions of dollars into violence prevention so that we're not here again. But we have to stop the false narratives that tear us apart, because I also understand, as you do, that we can both uplift the police and hold them accountable. We can have safety and justice. We can build our downtowns and build our neighborhoods. We can teach our kids about college as well as the trades. An equitable Chicago is a strong Chicago, and a strong Chicago is a safe Chicago. Thank you.
Representative Buckner, your opening statement.
Thank you, Joan, and thank you, WCPT, for allowing us the space to do this today. And I'll start off by saying it's an honor to be on the ideas panel and not the insults panel. We'll be a little bit better with this group of folks. My name is Cam Buckner. I am a son of Chicago, born and raised in this city. I played in Chicago parks. I went to Chicago public schools. I graduated, left for college, came back for law school, and I now represent Chicago and Chicagoans north to south, from the Gold Coast to South Shore in the Illinois General Assembly. I'm the son of a teacher, 33 years, and the son of a law enforcement officer in the city of Chicago, 27 years. I come from a family where public service is the rent that we pay to be here in this city, and I'm trying to continue that tradition. As the past immediate chair of the Illinois House Legislative Black Caucus, I help usher in monumental legislation, sweeping criminal justice reform, the most comprehensive and consequential clean energy legislation in the history of this country, and fighting the gun lobby tooth and nail, not once but twice, to be the lead sponsor on the bill to ban unserialized, untraceable ghost guns from our streets and the ban on assault weapons just a few weeks ago. Listen, my mother came to Chicago in 1955. She moved here from a small town in the Mississippi Delta, and my grandparents decided to leave because in August of 1955, Emmett Till was murdered, lynched, brutalized, and thrown in the Tallahatchie River in the town next door to where my mom grew up at. My grandparents came here for safety and opportunity. We need to be able to provide the same safety and opportunity to the young people in Chicago, like my son, like your children, if we're going to make the city the best version of itself. Thank you.
Alderman Sawyer.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Chicagoans. I realized over my 12 years of service on the city council, a lot of you may not know me, but you may know some of the things that I've done as a leader on the council. When you notice that there are no more parking meter deals in Chicago anymore, that was something that I led many years in fighting that to make sure that we'd never have that again. When we talk about expansion of the mid-sized business initiative and small business initiative, that is something that I led on and sponsored years ago, and I'm very proud of it. My resolution was used to negotiate the FOP contract that I entered not once, but twice. I entered in 2016 and again right before the negotiation of the contract, something, again, I led on. The original Fight for 15, I was part of a small group that initiated that. I see one of my colleagues in the room as well, where we started that fight with ending later on we're very proud of. And also the most sweeping police reform probably in the country right now with the Empowering Communities for Public Safety. And that's about me of my accomplishments. But more importantly, the thing I think you should know about me is that I'm the person that is able and has proven to bring opposing forces together, because I bring them together in the interest that we have all in common. And that's for a better Chicago. Better Chicago, not just for us, but for the next generation. So I want to be that person that can help the city, that can heal the city, that can share resources with the city, with the intention on making a much greater city than we even have now. And we do have a great city, a world-class city. But as mayor, my goal is to make it that much better, that more serviceable and approachable, making sure that everybody gets the service that they deserve. And I'm looking forward to the conversation today. Thank you.
Mr. Green, your opening statement.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. You know, I'm running for mayor. My name is Jamal Green, and I'm running for mayor because I want to fulfill Chicago's promise. And I'm tired of politicians using this seat as an ego project and not to make an impact on all of Chicago. I'm from the South Side. My mother, a single mother who been at the post office 35 years. My grandmother was at the post office for 41. So I come from a working class family. And she did everything that she could to provide us with the best life that we can have. But that came with living in a neighborhood that was very impoverished. That came with living in a neighborhood where I saw many folks being shot in front of me. That came with looking out my window and seeing shootouts, in front of our house. That came with going to public schools, several public schools that didn't have the resources to be able to give the attention to students and make sure that there were counselors and wraparound services for a lot of the students that are in need. And all of those experiences made me an organizer. Made me an organizer to fight against the establishment, whether it was for Laquan McDonald, who was shot 16 times by police, or whether it was for small businesses that were looted and we gave out $250,000 to get them back open, or whether it was Chase Bank when they redlined the South and West Sides and no politician stood with me in fighting the largest bank in the world and we made them give $1 billion back to the South and West Sides of Chicago. I'm here and I'm running for mayor because it's time for someone that's ready to make an impact on the next generation of Chicago and is going to move forward a plan to really bring the whole city together and make the next generation of Chicago, make Chicago a better city for the next generation of Chicago. I'm a father of three boys, raising them in public schools, and we need a mayor who really is going to invest in every neighborhood and make sure that no matter the neighborhood, no matter the income status, no matter their background, you have the opportunity to grow and thrive all throughout the city of Chicago, and that's where I'm running.
Once again, we welcome all of you to this panel. Thank you for being here. This question is for Alderman King. One of your answers to a staffing shortage of police officers is a pledge to hire up to 1,000 retired Chicago Police Department officers for less dangerous duties. How would you convince these former retired officers to leave retirement, and where would you get the money?
Yeah.
And if you could expound upon what you would want them to do.
Great. Great question. I'd be happy to. First of all, we have the money. We have over 1,700 positions that we need to fill in the police department. So that's that particular answer. Other big cities call on reserves or retired officers. New York has 4,000 retired officers. Our retired officers are already working other jobs. They would love to come back. Some of them age out, so I would incentivize them coming back. It'd be part-time work. We'd fill them in less dangerous places like our detectives. Our clearance rates, despite what the mayor says, are some of the lowest in the country, and the disparity is even lower when you get to black and brown communities. So detective roles, they could go come back in times of surge. So when we have festivals or other things that are going on in the city, you'd call on your reserves so that you don't have to pull your officers from the communities that they're protecting. And like I said, police are part of the solution, but they're not the only solution. They are our brothers and sisters and uncles and aunts, so they're part of our community, and we need them as part of the solution. But we also have to get to some of the root causes. But that's what I would do
Thank
with
you.
The reserve. Thank you.
Representative Buckner, you've made a similar pledge to eliminate the officer deficit. You say you're going to do it in your first 2 years in office. How exactly are you going to hire these 1,700 new officers, especially since there seems to be a nationwide staffing shortage?
So first off, all of the folks who are filling those roles do not have to be sworn officers. What I've talked about a lot in my plan is the civilianization of certain functions of CPD. There was an article that came out recently about folks who have to register people who have been on a registry for gun crimes or for other crimes. The people who are doing that work today are detectives. But the fact of the matter is that our clearance rate is dismal. It's abysmal. It continues to drop. So when we need people on the street actually solving crimes, we should put people in those roles. I've also talked about making sure that we have a robust mental health responder model within CPD, meaning that we are not sending an officer with a gun and a badge to talk to a person who has said that they're having a schizophrenic episode. We've seen this happen way too often in our society, in this city, and we've got to do something different. It's making sure that we have the apparatus in place throughout CPD, moving around resources and making sure that we are finding ways to keep our people safe without re-traumatizing them based on years and years of what has happened with this department and specifically communities of color.
Alderman Sawyer, in your public safety plan, you state that Chicago has nearly tripled per capita police spending since 1964. In that same time, the clearance rate on many crimes has fallen as police have had to take on more duties. Are we spending too much on the police in Chicago? What's the remedy?
I don't think we're necessarily spending too much. We spend too much in too many bad places. And I think that we need to, when we talk about resetting and refocusing, we want to make sure that resources are getting to citizens as quickly as possible. When you call 911, you expect somebody to respond. Now, I agree with my colleagues, for example, we can have other people respond to that call, provided that you're not in a life-threatening situation. If you're not, say your car got stolen and you called 911, somebody should respond to you and should respond to you timely. But back to you, we want to make sure that we can reallocate certain areas to non-police roles, promote those police from within, get them to where they need to be, get them the resources and education necessary to move up to detective, and incorporate our plan again, which I am proud to say that we've implemented. You'll be voting on this upcoming election, using that community police model where we can reestablish that trust between the community and the police, where we can increase those clearance rates, because people know what happened. We have to get that information from them, and that means we have to have effective detective work in addition to protection for those witnesses, which is also, I hate to be redundant, I have also a gun violence prevention ordinance that includes a witness protection program that's currently in city council. So we have to do all those things in order to increase that clearance rate and also make sure that we have proper staffing levels on all levels.
Okay, Alderman Sawyer, I have to cut you off
there.
Mr. Green, you unveiled a comprehensive public safety plan that you said would cost about $5 billion. The current administration is already struggling to find funds to fund public safety initiatives. You probably won't even have the millions of federal dollars that have come through recently because of COVID and other things. So as mayor, how do you get $5 billion for your plan, and how would you get it through city council?
Well, let me just say that the price tag goes over all different departments. It's not fully the public safety budget. So a part of public safety is what we did was we made it to where we're not just talking about police when it comes to public safety. We cannot continue to increase the police budget year after year and not get any results. We must make sure that people are centered and people are first. It makes no sense that yesterday they unveiled a $170 million police academy. And then right in a police academy, they said, oh, we're going to give a section of it for young people to come after school. Young people deserve real investment, and they deserve their own community centers. They deserve after-school programming. They deserve trade and tech hubs. They deserve to be able to have an apprenticeship and a job opportunity. We must invest in young people if we ever want to get out of the crisis that we're in, and that's what our plan does. So we put everything together. From housing, we talked about using our bonding capacity so that we can back 10,000 home loans to repopulate the neighborhoods. We talked about incentivizing so that we can create an affordable housing throughout and increase our affordable housing supply in record time. And we also talked about a public bank in the city of Chicago. Bank of North Dakota did it. We can have a bank charter that invests back in the people, and all that money comes back, goes right back into city services instead of prisons like our larger banks.
You have all said that you would replace Chicago Police Superintendent David Brown. Why would you replace him? And in your administration, who would be the superintendent? Let me start with you, Representative Buckner.
Thank you for the question, Santita. So, listen, all of us have jobs where we're accountable to the people who we work for and with, and we have metrics and rubrics by which we are graded. The truth of the matter is that in Chicago, the murder rate, the violent crime rate is way too high, and the clearance rate is way too low. The truth of the matter is that the rift between CPD's top brass and the rank and file officers is worse than I've ever seen it. And what also is true is that communities and police have not found a better way to get along under the leadership of this mayor and this superintendent. We can't continue to do the same thing and look for and expect different results. In my state representative district, I represent five different police districts. So I talk to beat cops every day, cap sergeants every day, lieutenants every day, district commanders and deputy chiefs every single day. CPD has the talent in the pipeline of people who know this city, who know the department, and who know what we need to do to move forward. We've just got to give them the power to, and the ability to do it in a way that we can be the best city in the nation when it comes to constitutional community policing. And David Brown is not the person to do it, and Lori Lightfoot is not the person to lead that fight.
Alderman Sawyer, your answer?
Yes. This is a situation, as it relates to the superintendent, that, one, we want to go in a direction, a new direction. Two, the person we're really trying to remove is the real superintendent, which is the mayor. The mayor has been micromanaging the police department for far too long. I am not a police officer. I have not been trained. I have not studied, with the exception of limited classes I've taken at the police department. I want to make sure that we use our community commission that we have in place to select an appropriate person, a person that has this respect of the rank and file, the person that has gone up through the system, someone that knows policing, that can advise me on going forward, the proper protocol, proper scheduling, proper staffing levels. You know, how do we apprehend criminals, you know, within constitutional bounds? I just don't think that Superintendent David Brown is that person because, quite honestly, he has been co-opted by the mayor and he's not been able to do his own decisions. I had looked at David Brown's career in Dallas when he was down there, and when I looked at it, quite honestly, I was impressed. We did not get the same David Brown here that they had down there. And we want a real live superintendent that can do the job, that can advise the mayor, he can advise me on how to get things done, and that's what will happen under a Sawyer administration.
Mr. Green?
Well, let me say I disagree with Alderman Sawyer. His record in Dallas is why Dallas hates him. And so, you know, the reality of the situation is that we need a new superintendent who's from Chicago who really cares about what's going on in the communities. It's kind of night and day. I don't care what many people have to say about the last superintendent, Eddie Johnson. But the night and day difference is that Eddie Johnson was very passionate about being connected to the neighborhoods and to the stakeholders around the city. That's the difference that we have here. This superintendent, you know, you barely see him in the community at all. And no one in the community even knows how to even reach anybody in headquarters, let alone anybody close to him. So we need somebody that's passionate about the neighborhoods, somebody who really understands the neighborhoods as well, and is going to work with all of the stakeholders throughout the city to make the city safer. And in my view, David Brown is just not that guy.
Who would be that guy?
Well, I think that, once again, you know, we need to really look at who can have the trust of the people and the rank and file. A commission has been put in place that we must listen to. And we need to take their recommendations and then look to see who would be best fit for that role. But, you know, I have ideas, but I'm not going to put them out here there right now.
Well, I just
asked. Alderman Sawyer, you wanted a quick rebuttal there?
Well, just to clarify, the information that I received was a combination of information I saw on the Internet and talking to quite a few Dallas police officers who felt that he was doing a good job there, not here.
Okay. Alderman King.
Superintendent, thank you. Mic check, one, two, but my time.
Could you start our time over again?
I'd like to reclaim my time.
Thank you.
Let me know when you're ready.
Go ahead.
Okay. So it's not personal. You know, I'm sure Superintendent Brown is a lovely guy. When I talk to him, you know, he's very respectful. You know, but the reality is that arrests are down 75%. Clearance rates are down. And the police just aren't working for this superintendent nor for this mayor. And, you know, we need somebody who can come in and kind of do a sea change. We can have more police in the communities where they're needed right now. I floated this plan. The mayor should be stealing it. The superintendent should be stealing it, where you go from a 40-week, 4-day on, 3-day off work week, which gives us up to 50%, listen, 50% more officers in the communities, in all communities where they need it. We need this right now. And the fact that they're not even implementing that, we do it in the 5th District, so it's not, you know, they do it in other cities. Officers get the time off, the 3 days, the rest that they need, the mental health repair that they need. It's not, so with this superintendent, I just think he doesn't understand the city, and we need a sea change.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the topic of small business. We want to ask all the candidates this question. What would you do to ensure that women and minority-owned small businesses have a chance to thrive in Chicago? Particularly, how would you address issues around access to capital for some, and for others, a fair and open process for city contracts? Alderman Sawyer, we're going to start with you.
Thank you. In my opening, I did kind of mention this earlier. I did help create the mid-size and small business initiatives in the procurement department. And what that is that gives minority and women-owned businesses an opportunity to compete among similar factions. So larger groups don't come in and just swoop up all of the contracts that are available. The small business initiative is under $2 million. You can bid on those, only those contractors that are in that space. So minorities and women-owned can bid, and they bid as primes. Same with the mid-sized business initiative. It's between $2 and $10 million. You bid with each other on similar interests and similar sized companies. Larger companies cannot come in and just engulf all of the space there. And again, you're bidding as primes. That way, you're getting prime experience, you're getting prime credit, and you're making money without having people, larger groups, take, you know, a bulk of your money away from you. So with that, I want to make sure that access. I've also instituted or made ordinances about removing caps, about eliminating the public personal net worth, because all this does is create mediocrity. It doesn't create an opportunity for you to reinvest in your business, grow your business, and make it larger, because once you get too large, they kick you out the program, and then where you go?
Thank you. Mr. Green.
Well, you need somebody that really understands business in this role to even talk about it on several of them. And one of the biggest problems, and I just had a meeting with the governor not too long ago, about this fact, right? When you look at the state contracts and the percentage that are going to minorities, it's abysmal, All right. And the number has not changed since he's been the governor. And we got to talk to him about how we're going to do better in that right, as well as in the city. First thing first, I want to talk about our small businesses. Every first business license should be free, right? We need to make it to where they understand that we appreciate them for creating opportunities in our communities. And those folks who have first dibs to that will be the folks who have roots in those communities. We also must streamline the process of licensing, permitting, and zoning in the city of Chicago so we can make it easier to open up a business. It shouldn't take months and months and months to open up a business in the city of Chicago. A lot of small business owners can't take that. We got to hold the city accountable. So if you say you're coming in for an inspection and then they don't know when you're gonna come, that's a problem, right? It hurts those businesses. So we're gonna have accountability on the city level. And then as far as contracting, we got to be intentional about making sure that we remove the barriers when it comes to contracting. If small contractors can't get
Mr. Green,
the bonding
I'm gonna have to
or
cut
insurance,
you off.
We need to insure them. We got to step in and we got to remove the barriers.
Alderman King.
Well, I'll pick up where he left off. it, being intentional is super important. Inequity did not happen in a vacuum, and so you have to be strategic about making sure that true equity happens. Data is very important to that. Mama always said, follow the money. When I first came in as a city council member, I followed the money, but the data isn't there. So now if you look at our budget books, every single budget now shows by demographics where our billions of dollars of money is spent. And unfortunately, and quite ashamedly, under this administration, contracts are down for African Americans, and they're down for women. So you have to put your money where your mouth is. And so that's something that we need to do immediately. And it hasn't really been done since Harold Washington. We haven't had a robust, equitable distribution of contracts in the city. And this is wrong in a city that celebrates 60% people of color. And their return on investment is green, and it's 3% or less. That's wrong. So we have to know where the data is, figure out what our baseline is, and seek to increase that every year.
Representative Buckner.
Chicago is the home of the American labor movement. Yet our city government does not have a robust labor department. We have an office within the Office of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection that does some labor work, but it's not enough. I've talked about doing the work to stand up an actual labor department that can help move this along when it comes to small businesses. We will set up and institute bad business fees for folks who aren't doing things the right way, but also giving folks the technical experience and the opportunity to grow their businesses. We will revamp the business enterprise system here in Chicago. We'll make sure that it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do and that people aren't finding loopholes to take advantage of it, because equity requires specificity, and we know that. We'll also make sure that financial institutions who are doing work with the city are actually showing their work, and if they are not lending in a way that helps this city grow in an equitable way, we have to cut our contracts with them and stop doing business with them. That's how we bring this all together. That's how we take the appropriate steps to move Chicago to be the most equitable economic city in this entire country.
And Joan, we move on to ethics reform. I think that we all agree that we need to have our ethics strengthened, and we do need reforms in many areas. Each one of you, I'd like to ask you, in your first 4 years as mayor, could you tell us one ethics reform that you would to which you would commit? Let me start with you, Mr. Green.
I got a lot of them. I think that one of the pieces that must be done by this mayor is we must amend the automatic prerogative. I think what's been happening is, in the city of Chicago is you have a lot of aldermen that are holding on to land, which is causing, and the reasons why, obviously, we know when we look at some of the indictments that are coming down. We got to really step in and really do something in regards to automatic prerogative, because it is a real problem. We got tens of thousands of pieces of land that needs to get out and get developed, and it's really hurting neighborhoods.
Alderman King.
Well, coming after that, I don't look good in orange or black and white, by the way. I'd like to push back on that narrative, which is a false narrative that this mayor has promulgated from day one when she looked back at us after her inauguration and basically said, you know, you're no good. There's a lot of public servants in the city who do a lot of good things. And I think it's a power grab just trying to bring everything to the central government. We need to go back to kind of a decentralized government. We don't have to go that back that far to show that corruption exists in administration, silver shovel, all kinds of things. It comes down to individual people. Again, we can't lead our narratives by these false, you know, fringe opportunities. We have to lead our narratives by good people in our city. And most of the people who are public servants are doing really good things in our city. Without aldermanic prerogative, we would have had a casino right in the middle of Bronzeville, which was a non-starter. My community did not want a casino. It was planned to be there. But because aldermanic prerogative, or as I like to see it, the voice of the community who elected me, I chose to use that voice to fight against city council. So we have to think about how we address this issue, and I think we're doing it on the fringe.
That was her rebuttal to you. We don't get a second rebuttal, so we're going to move on. Go ahead, Santini.
We have Representative Buckner.
Yeah, so one of the things that we have to deal with immediately, and we're seeing it right now in a very contemporaneous way, is that we have a campaign contribution issue. We have to change the way campaign finance works in this city, whether we're talking about cryptocurrency or casinos. We've seen connections between folks who are running for mayor or folks who are mayor and bad contribution investments that really fly in the face of what the people of Chicago want. Listen, when it comes to aldermanic prerogative, the mayor has talked a lot about that specific issue because she wants to distract people from what an out-of-control mayor looks like. She wants to talk about the city council when she should be talking about what's happening on the fifth floor. I have pushed and committed to real city council reform, making city council a true legislative body, letting them pick their own leadership, pick their own committee chairs, and have their own parliamentarian so that the people of Chicago can have a functioning government, which we do not have today.
Hmm. Alderman Sawyer?
Wow, that's what I was about to say. It's funny that say that, but you. No, but we actually talk about this a lot, so it is interesting. But one of the first things I would do that we talk about as ethics reform is on day one, I want to give my colleague, preferably, a bill to take to Springfield to limit the terms for mayor to two terms. just my guy, I love him to death. But I do that. I want to do that. I think that's a sign that as a leader, we should, you know, acknowledge that executives should not try to stay in office forever. There should be a two-term limit or whatever the limit that the legislator and we can work on it together. It should be a limit, and that shows leadership by example. I agree with Cam as related to the council structure. It makes no sense. You know, we learned this in seventh grade ethics in civics class. The chief executive doesn't run the legislative branch. You know, the mayor should not be running the council. The council should pick their own president, should pick their leader, should pick their committees, like Cam stated, absolutely. We talk about it all the time in council. The last two times I brought it up and I kept getting shut down. So it is something that we should do, something that is pertinent, and I think it's extremely ethical, and I think you'll get better leadership out of these combination of reforms.
I'll do it for you, I promise.
thank you, panelists. We're going to take a real quick, probably 3-minute commercial break. Welcome back, everyone. I am Joan Esposito. This is the WCPT Chicago Mayoral Forum. I'm now joined by Patty Vasquez for round two of our panel. Let's get right to it. Patty, get started.
Thank you so much, Joan. Reported predominantly... If we could take a moment, I just want to make sure everything's okay over here. Everything's
okay.
Good? Excellent. As reported predominantly by Greg Pratt in the Chicago Tribune, many Lightfoot critics have said the mayor is using her Invest Southwest program simply as a marketing tool. Is she claiming too much credit, and would you continue the program if elected mayor? So this is going to be for everyone. I'm going to begin with Alderman King.
So, yes, as reported phenomenally by Greg Pratt. It's really a lot of smoke and mirrors, unfortunately. I think the mayor understands she needs African-American votes, and she's pandering to the African-American community. Unfortunately, every project that's in my ward that she's included in her books are things that her administration had nothing to do with. You can talk about 4400 Grove or 508 East Pershing or the CIBC bank that's there or the Millhouse development or Bella Noir. All of these I was intimately involved in. And I don't mind sharing the credit. Mayors definitely take credit of, you know, projects that go on. So, but I think it's a lack of collaboration because on 80% of those projects, her administration pushed back in certain ways. You know, if there are projects that we brought, then, you know, there wasn't this type of collaboration and the resources weren't flowing. But if, you know, projects or ideas of theirs, then, you know, that would flow. And again, you know, as alderman, I represent the voice of my community, which is why I would work with the 50 aldermen, including my colleague up here, as a city council or as a mayor, because they understand what the people think.
Thank you so much. And then Representative Buckley.
The way that Invest Southwest has been rolled out is nothing more than a glorified public relations stunt built around election year and built on the fears of the people of Chicago and the fact that we have been disinvested in communities like the one I live in and the one I grew up in for generations. And shame on the mayor for what she's doing. Listen, the most investment that she has really put in any of these communities is the Cop Academy on the west side. And that has not helped anybody and won't help anybody who looks like me from a community like that. Listen, we know that this was many of these projects were Rahm Emanuel projects. And what the mayor has done, I've heard people call it plagiarism. I've heard people call it stealing. I think the young kids call it swagger jacking. Like, she took it, right? And the truth of the matter is that if we do real investment in our city, we will see a population boom. We'll see people come back. But as of right now, Invest Southwest has only made it worse as people continue to leave Chicago, specifically black people. They're not investing Southwest. They're going south by Southwest and moving to Georgia and Texas.
Thank you so much. Alderman Sawyer?
Yes, in response to the question, I would use a variation of the program, and I would thank the person that started it, which was Rahm Emanuel. This is the situation. When mayors come in and she's got a project, he had a project, the mayor came in with the new administration, she saw it, and she made some adjustments to it and made some, you know, moved some pebbles around and claimed it as her own. Take credit. I mean, give credit where credit is due. It was a decent program, needed some upgrading. This is not a horrible program, but it needs a lot of upgrading. That's the thing about it. You know, the premise of the program is taking money from larger developers, spreading it out to others to give them an opportunity to thrive. You know, it was used to be called Retail Thrive Zones. Now it's Invest Southwest. You know, maybe I'll call it something else. But, you know, the important part is, we have to figure out a real way to get investment to small business owners so that they can expand, start, or grow a business in our neighborhoods. Each one of our neighborhoods should be self-sustaining. That means everybody should have pretty much the same things. We all should have eateries. We all should have professional services. We should all have all the, you know, kids, you know, places to play, gymborees and things as a matter. But this program is not the program that does it. We have to do better.
Thank you. Mr. Green?
Well, you know, I agree that Invest Southwest is nothing but politics, right? Every time they get up there, they say, oh, we got $1.8 billion we invested. And everybody in the community start looking around and say, where? You know, it's all politics. And at the end of the day, what really needs to happen is we really need to sit communities down all throughout this city and really build a quality of life plan and figure out what that looks like. You know, I work closely with a good friend of mine, David Doig, and Chicago Neighborhood Initiatives out in Pullman. In 10-year span, they brought jobs, right? It started with a Walmart, made Walmart give 60% of the jobs to 60628, right? They brought Whole Foods Distribution Center. They brought SC Johnson. They brought in Amazon. Then they said kids need somewhere to go. They built a youth center. Then they bought all of the row houses and sold them affordably at $140,000 so that everybody that was working in those jobs can afford to own a home in the neighborhood. When you look at everything that they've done in a 10-year span and look at the crime rate, how it has dramatically decreased over half, you can see what investment really is supposed to look like. And we need to do that all throughout the city of Chicago. Everyone needs basic needs, and we need to provide those for each individual community.
Thank you.
Now, everybody's favorite topic, pensions. Chicago's pension fund could be in deep trouble in 2023 if we get a market crash or a bad recession. Chicago could have to react quickly in some manner. How would you prepare for a potential pension crisis? This is for all the candidates. How are you going to prepare for a pension crisis? What specific steps might you take? Representative Buckner, we're going to start with you on this.
Yeah, so let's be real about where we are when it comes to pensions. We are in a very tough and precarious spot. What this mayor has attempted to do is to paint a rosy picture of where we are from a pension standpoint. The ARPA money and the federal funds that she has used for down payments, which are one-time payments that we will never get back, they do not show the full picture of our pension system. Listen, the Government Accountability Office in Washington, D.C., they say that a healthy pension plan is funded at 80%. We are nowhere near that. Our pension plans are way below that, 43% for the laborers, and all the way down to 19% funded for our firefighters in this city, right? So let's have a come-to-Jesus moment about that and then figure out what the next move is. We got to look at this differently. We got to figure out how we bring in suggestions and solutions like reamortization. When the bond market and the interest rates are at the right level, how do we bring in pension obligation bonds to make sure that we are paying off things and make sure that we also can level off our payments and do these things starting today so that by 2055 we can have a fully funded and healthy functioning pension system?
Thank you very much. Alderman Sawyer.
Yes. We have to have a very responsible long-term financial plan. And I get hit on this a lot because I stated earlier that I would not make any such promises as it relates to taxes and things of that matter. And I stand by that. It's not that, none of us are going to try to raise taxes. But what I'm saying is that part of a responsible financial plan is long-term planning on all levels. That includes taxes. You have to look at what your plans are going to be as it relates to what's going to happen if we do run into a recession, that we may have to do things differently to make sure we make those pension obligation payments. But our own house has to be in order first. We have to clear this first. You know, just like when you're at home, when you're worrying about bills and you're thinking that and you're on an adjustable rate mortgage might go up, you have to cut costs and you have to be trimmer, but you still want to make sure that you get the services that you deserve and require. But that starts at home first. Stop sweeping accounts, every year and saying that's a budget item change. It's not. You know, let's do real true budgeting so that we'll know where we are. We know where we are financially, and we can account for these true pension costs within our own selves first before we seek any help or trying to get any new revenues.
Mr. Green.
I'm sorry. I have to respond to Alderman Sawyer on this one. I'm really tired of politicians stepping up talking about taxes to get us out of the crisis that they've allowed us to be in all of these years. You've been a public servant. If you have been a public servant over 4 years, you knew of the crisis that we were in. And the crisis, when we talk about the pension crisis, this went 83% higher than 1996. And now we're talking about here again, and you're talking about you possibly got to look at our taxes and look at raising them. Property taxpayers are tired of politicians lying to us about the pensions and then coming back later to say we're going to raise your taxes. This is what really needs to happen. What really needs to happen is now we must start to get our fiscal house in order and make sure that we go to the state so that we can address this crisis firsthand. One of the ideas that we move forward as well is a public bank, right? When we talk about having a public bank, some of that profit in a public bank can go to paying down our pension crisis. We got to have a long-term plan now because the politicians in Illinois have ruined it for so many years and continue to pass the bucket to the next person and the next person and the next person until we're going to be in really bad shape when my kids grow up. We got to address this problem now and put us on a roadmap to a better fiscal future and no more using property taxpayers to do so.
Alderman Sawyer, your chance to rebut.
Yes, I hear you talking, young brother, but I want you to tune in on this for a second. I wasn't talking about raising taxes. I'm talking about a responsible tax plan. That's two different things. It has nothing to do with raising taxes. It's not, and it's avoiding getting in the problem that we got into in the first place. Other politicians say, hey, we're never going to raise taxes. We don't have to pay the pension anymore. We're all good. Everything is cool. Oh, got to raise taxes $1 billion now. I'm talking about something that bank rating agencies like, expected, small, incremental, and predictable changes and adjustments from time to time, not a wholesale tax increase.
Thank you. Alderman King.
So, yeah, we first of all, we need to work with the state towards pension reform. That's something that we need to do. But we also have to grow our city. If we don't grow our city, we're never really going to deal with that. And I have a plan to do that. We can use something called opportunity zones, which are investments that people can make into areas, under-resourced areas that are already dedicated in the city, mostly in black and brown communities, where we can have investors put their money in for 10 years, come out tax-free, their gains and everything, which is something that people want to do. We're the only big city that hasn't done that. So I would do that and have billions of dollars coming into our communities, surrounded by our schools as anchors, bringing selective enrollment schools with a strong neighborhood component into those neighborhoods so that we can really grow our community. I would also stop these false fights. We had a fight, you know, between what the mayor called, you know, between safety and equity over the red cameras or red light cameras and lowering those thresholds, which gave us about $40 million in a few months, which is great, but it was off the backs of black and brown people. We raised our hands as city councilmen and said, listen, we can redistribute these. I can put some on Michigan Avenue. I have colleagues who could put them in Lincoln Park. We could have had more equity, more money, and more safety. And so we've got to figure out plans for revenue growth as well. But growing our city is the best way to do that.
Or we could have not had red light cameras at all.
We don't get a rebuttal unless you are attacked by name.
I'm just saying.
Thank you.
We are going to turn our focus to education. And this is a similar question from our earlier panel. In Chicago Public Schools, enrollment is down about 82,000 students over the last decade. Black and brown communities have been hit by school closures, and students, teachers, and parents were hurt by the COVID-19 pandemic. What is your plan to get Chicago Public Schools back on track? We'll begin with Alderman Sawyer.
First of all, again, accountability. We have to make sure that we're doing the right thing for our children. We're not doing the right thing for our children if, again, like you stated, enrollment's going down, yet spending and personnel costs are going up. It's a non-starter. It makes no sense. We have to really drive down and find out what we are doing and what we should be doing to first, foremost, and all, educate our students. That's not spending money on front office expenses. We're going to have to take a real look after the moratorium is closed on what we're looking at with our schools. When you have a school that is under 5% enrollment and 0% proficiency in reading and math, and they don't have the resources, extracurricular activities, library, and all the things that you want to have in a fully functioning school there, we have to reimagine what our schools are going to look like in the 21st century. We're not doing it. We pay more attention and have more attachment to the building than we do to our own children, our students. We have to do better. We have to invest all of our resources, everything that we need to do toward our children, toward their education, particularly their social and emotional growth, because I'm going to tell you, I don't have enough time to talk about it, but it will curl your hair if I can tell you some of the stories about what I hear in our elementary schools in my area.
Thank you. Mr. Green.
We have someone in this race at every level of government, and I don't see the urgency when it comes to our kids who are suffering and dying in the streets each and every day. That's why I'm running. I'm running because I see kids in the neighborhood, and I mentor kids right now who are literally going into school buildings without any type of resources in those school buildings. We have promoted charter schools and shut down these buildings. And then they have a lot of these schools that are under-enrolled without the resources and the wraparound resources needed to give individual attention to these students. And our kids are suffering. One of the things we must do is we must move away from the enrollment-based formula. We need to move to needs-based formula. We need to make sure that every school in the city of Chicago gets the investment that it deserves. And it's an institution that whenever you go into a neighborhood or move into any neighborhood, the quality of education should be the standard. You got selective enrollment schools where you got to test to get into a few good schools. And then if you're poor and you can't test into those schools, then you got to go to a poor school that doesn't have the resources. You got $30,000 per kid that's supposed to be going into the schools. It's not making it into the classroom. classroom. They don't have counselors. They don't have books. They don't have any of the things that they need. And then we're just passing them through and sending them back out into the world.
Thank you.
It's utterly disgusting.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Alderman King?
Yeah, so as an educator, I know about this subject probably more than anyone. Again, we have to grow the city. And if we're not a safe community or have good schools, we're not going to do that. People are just choosing to leave, especially our teachers. So we have to incent them to be able to stay here. I'm offering a plan where we give essential workers incentives to come here. We've done it before where you have, you know, no interest loans or dollar lots or money for rehab or down payment incentives. So we can incent our teachers and our other essential workers, which we've already forgotten about. So we've got to grow our schools. Opportunity zones, as I mentioned before, to grow our communities because it has to happen at the same time. We have to have strong after-school programs. There's no reason why every student, K, pre-K through 12, doesn't have a strong after-school program. That's something that we can do with little money and do that again overnight. Bringing back the trades in our schools in a meaningful way is also something that we need to do. We used to do it. We have to have options for our kids who don't necessarily choose college. We can do this. We're a strong union town, and we can put them in the 11th and 12th grade so that our kids can have those opportunities of future jobs.
Thank you, Alderman. Yep. Representative Buckner.
So I'm a CPS student, CPS graduate, K through 12. My mother spent 33 years as a CPS teacher. My little sister is currently a CPS teacher on the South Side. My oldest sister is currently a CPS principal in Austin. This is very important to me, and it's personal to me. Listen, we didn't just lose enrollment in CPS. That sounds a little bit too passive. By the way, we disinvested in our community schools. We told these families to hit the road, and it's not okay. So we have to make up for that, and we can only make up for that with true investment. The evidence-based funding model, I have led the fight for that in Springfield to make sure that the money that Springfield sends to CPS gets to the young people that need it the most, not based on school population or enrollment, but based on needs. I've also talked about the $436 million that we are missing and giving to our young people. We got to make sure that we re-up those resources. I wrote the moratorium on school closings in Chicago and passed it through the General Assembly to make sure that we gave our young people a runway so we can put the resources in the school so we don't leave them behind like we have in the past. I've also begun to work with ISBE to reconfigure the tier system so we can make sure that we have, once again, the resources that our young people need. And I fought tooth and nail to bring the elected school board over the finish line in Springfield. All of these things and more are what we need to do to make sure that we have a healthy and safe public education system here.
We're going to switch to public transportation. That's our overall topic. You will each get individual questions in this section. CTA ridership has plummeted. It's nowhere near pre-pandemic levels. City buses and trains have become unreliable and unsafe. Mr. Green, with regard to rider safety, would you increase police or security presence on the CTA?
Well, I definitely think that CTA needs, while we are dealing with a lot of the root causes of what's going on CTA, they need some type of force. We have moved forth a plan to have a peacekeepers agency under CTA where folks are patrolling the trains to mitigate concerns. One of the first things we would do in the first 100 days is we would declare a state of emergency on public transit, right? We need to free up dollars to really send social workers on our trains and our buses to get people off who really need services. That's one of the things that we must do and make sure that they have the housing and the mental health and substance abuse services that they need. Right now, CTA is a mobile homeless shelter because we are not addressing the real root causes of the community, and they're just going to our train. So right now we will have a peacekeepers agency to patrol the trains, and then we will address making it safe, clean, and fast. It stinks on CTA right now. It smells of urine. We got to address that problem by adding more shifts. We got to make sure our CTA workers feel valued and, with making sure that they have free college education and home down payment and closing cost assistance. We got to do a lot. And it's going to take
Mr. Green, we gotta cut
getting rid of the leadership of CTA is one of the first things we must do as well.
Representative Buckner, your transportation platform has many CTA revisions, including two train line extensions, a new metro line, a fully electric bus fleet, and real-time surveillance. Considering the CTA cannot even reach its pre-COVID functionality, how do you expect to implement all of these policies?
Listen, reliability. When the CTA is reliable, when it's clean, when it's safe, when it's accessible, people use it. And when people use it, it works better. That's the way the system is set up. For those of you who have followed me, it may be no surprise to you, I took the red line here today, right? And it's very clear to me that this system is broken. This is not about resources, right? We continue to pump more and more money into CTA, and we have not seen the results. It sounds familiar, right? We see that in this city a lot. When we talk about safety, reliability, accessibility, find a way to connect our safety cameras, find a way to coordinate with Metra and PACE, making sure that we can speed up the electrification of our bus system and coordinate with PACE so we're not doing two different things at one time. When we talk about the 2019 bus redesign study, making sure that our bus routes are running the way that they're supposed to run. Bus rapid transit on the places like the Western Avenue line and Ashland. Listen, we are leaving so much on the table. Our CTA should be clean, safe, and accessible, and it also has to be a catalyst for growth. This is how we bring more people to Chicago and get people to stay in Chicago. It is what a hallmark of a great city is.
Before we ask our next question, it is 3:02, and I have to say this is the Chicago Mayoral Forum on WCPT AM 820, Willow Springs, our legal ID. Now that we have done our due diligence, Alderman King, your question. In a survey by WBEZ, smoking came up as one of the most common complaints about the CTA experience. How would you address this and other nuisance and cleanliness issues?
Yeah, so, you know, I agree with some of the candidates up here. Cleanliness, smoking would fall into that category. There's no smoking on CTA. Safety, reliability. But what we really need is more resources. And in order to get those resources, we need to go to a regional approach for transportation in order to be a world-class transportation city. Other cities like New York and Boston have a regional approach. For instance, this is how it impacts us not having a regional approach. We got $29 million for electric buses in this city. Boston got like $129 million. New York got close to $200 million because the federal government sees our separate entities as fighting against each other. So the CTA, the PACE, and Metro are all part of those regional transportation systems, but we don't collaborate. We don't work together. So we have to come together as a regional transportation system to use the resources that we have and get from the federal government and economies of scales to make sure that it goes further. So that's one of the first things I would do, but that takes a lot of collaboration.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alderman Sawyer, so-called ghost buses and trains, where it appears that public transit is approaching you only disappear on a digital schedule before arriving, is a huge reliability concern for riders. How would you address this problem?
This is a problem that needs to take up to the top. As I heard a couple of people say about Dorval Carter, we're going to need to take a really good look at our leadership structure in that. We want to make sure that when you look on your phone or your smart tablet or whatever, and it says that a train or L is going to be there, it's supposed to be there. Come on. We want to do better, and that starts with making sure that your upper echelon leadership is letting know the others in the department that this is an important thing, that you will have consequences for putting on schedule ghost buses and ghost trains. That's all about reliability. That's about structure. That's about who's being the boss, who is being involved and responsible for these things. It is, it blows my mind when I see the ghost buses and the concept of ghost buses and rails. That's a reliability question. Reliability question means that you don't have the proper leadership there to instruct people to make sure that they have, know the importance of making sure that when you're coming on the L, you're expecting to go somewhere, work, school, and be on time. And you want that bus or that rail car to be there on time. That is a problem from the top, and we make sure that that changes at the top.
Our next category is actually you yourselves. We're going to ask you to talk about your experience. You all have varied degrees of experience from work in state government to city government to community organizing and other things. What, we're going to ask each of you this question, what about your experience in public service uniquely qualifies you to be the mayor of Chicago? Mr. Green, we're going to start with you.
Well, my experience are in several different areas. Community organizing, as you stated, with actually being next to the mothers and fathers who've lost kids to gun violence for over 10 years and planning those funerals and putting up thousands of dollars in reward money to catch suspects on the street. Actually being in the communities, mentoring young people, developing as a real estate broker as well as a businessman, right? Understanding how to open up a business and grow businesses and invest in small businesses all throughout the city as I have. I think all of the different experiences that I've experienced from organizing to business as well as my life experiences, experienced every single core issue in this city firsthand, from poverty to family with mental health problems, to housing and being homeless, to going into our schools that were failing me. You know, there were several different experiences that I've had personally that really shaped my view and why it's important to have a mayor of the city that can really relate to everyday people and to the working class people of this city.
Alderman King, what uniquely qualifies you to be mayor of the city of Chicago?
Yeah, so, you know, I think I've proven over the last 6.5 years as a city councilman that I can lead by attacking problems and not people and get things done by bringing people together. I've had a lot of hard and difficult challenges where I brought people together and we got in the room like grown people and came out with great legislation or projects, whether it be the Michael Reese Project, 4 striking developments in the city of Chicago, Obama Center, the 78, Lincoln Yards, all of those had dissension and contention, and Michael Reese didn't. And so we got in a room, we formed an advisory committee, we had people who are on opposite sides of affordable housing, of businesses, and brought them together, coming out with the most equitable development, according to the New York Times, one of the most equitable in the country, where the community and the developer sees an upside. Did that the same, changing Congress to Ida B. Wells, strategically put that together. DuSable Drive strategically brought people together to move that across. The fight for a $15 legislation was in the room with people on both sides, restaurants, recipients, workers in the industry, brought people together. So I am uniquely situated to take our city, move it forward, even in a pandemic.
Thank you. Representative Buckner.
I have a reputation of getting stuff done, simple and plain. Finding a way to yes instead of getting stuck at no, and it's who I am, it's who I have been, and it's who I will remain. My work on the federal level of government in the U.S. Senate for 6 years, on the state government, in state government, where I am currently, and then on the city level of government when I worked for the mayor of New Orleans, is unmatched. The only person in this race who has any real experience with a consent decree, as we talk about the Department of Justice and the work that's going on with CPD. I've done I've helped move monumental legislation in Springfield, like the ban on assault weapons, like the criminal legal reform that we passed a year and a half ago, and the expansion and extension of the earned income tax credit, real things that matter to people in Illinois and people in Chicago. But personally, the thing that makes me different here, the thing that makes will make me a great mayor, is not only have I been in the operating room when a family member has lost their lives because bullets in Chicago have ripped through their flesh, but also been in the legislative drafting room to put together legislation that can help move the city along. Listen, I wear this flag pin a lot, but I don't have to because it's not just on me, it's in me. I am Chicago, and this is why I will be the next person to be the mayor of Chicago.
Alderman Sawyer.
Thank you. Obviously, I can talk about my 12 years legislative experience. I think that I've been involved in some impactful legislation that I talked about earlier. I've been a lawyer 33 years. One of my proudest accomplishments was being LSC chair for 10 years at my local school where both of my children attended. But really, when I talk about my experience in public service, I have to go back about 30 years ago when I worked on street outreach. I worked on a gang truce
formed a group called United in Peace, and we worked on getting violence numbers back in the early 90s down, cut in half. And I'm extremely proud of that, but just showing my journey from working from the streets currently to the suites, I can work on both ends. I can talk to captains of industry. I can speak with how we need to improve our hospitality industry, but also talk about right into the face with a young brother or sister on the street that's been disinvested and feel that they're alone. I understand that because I went through that, had multiple meetings on a weekly basis, including bringing my infant child at the time to those meetings. So I'm not afraid to go into the belly of the beast and talk to people where they are to try to get things done. And I think that's really my public service that I'm really most proud of.
We're going to do a quick lightning round. These are 15-second answers, okay? What is one nice thing you can say about the Lightfoot administration? And I will start with Alderman King.
One nice thing. I think... struggling here. No. I think that her heart is in the right place, I hope.
Thank you.
Just 15 seconds.
Yes, thank you. Representative Buckner.
She definitely brought in the light. Corruption, ineptness, it can't hide anymore. We see it.
Alderman Sawyer.
I will say this about the mayor. Once we showed the inequities in the mental health department and show how it was understaffed and underutilized, we made the administration enforce them into spending multiple times more on public mental health, and I think that is a compliment to her.
Thank you. Mr. Green?
But you guys didn't open up the mental health facilities.
You want to talk about it? We can talk about it.
All right, but let me say this. You know, the one thing that I'll push to say that the mayor did well, which is a project that I helped her with when she first got in, was create the first ever youth commission that the city of Chicago has ever had, where young people have a voice at the seat at the table and can move forward reports to report to the mayor.
Another lightning round question. Even though you four are here, this, I want you to think in terms of all nine candidates right now vying to be the next mayor of the city of Chicago. Would you want any of the other candidates running for mayor to serve in your administration? If so, who? Let's start with Mr. Green.
For sure. I think that there are some great candidates, you know, in the race that do we got to say names or we just?
Well, yeah, that would be good.
Well, you know, each one of these candidates have something to offer here on this stage, you know, and
that's all you have to
that's
say.
That's all I got to say.
That's all you have to say. Alderman Sawyer.
I think highly of these individuals here and pretty much most of the candidates in this race. I think they all have attributes that would definitely fit into a Sawyer administration. And I would love to have quite a few of them here.
Representative Buckner.
It's going to take all of us to save Chicago, and so I'm looking forward to working with everybody who's in this race as the next mayor of Chicago.
Alderman King.
Yeah, I would say that as well, that we have to bring people together. You know, there's just too much dissension, and we really cannot move forward as a city until we do that. I think what I will say that I didn't say before is, you know, I tried to work with the administration, but I think the challenge is in COVID and social unrest, we missed an opportunity to bring us together as a city.
Thank you. Yep. We're going to turn to the lead pipes. This is a question that you can take 75 seconds to answer. New state laws will require a significantly faster pace for lead service line removal. These pipes are responsible for contaminating water, and the replacement rate is slow. How will you speed up this sluggish process? We'll begin with Representative Buckner.
So the fact that we have poisoned our people for generations is criminal, right? And we need to have a real conversation about that. The last administration pretended like the lead pipe issue didn't happen, like it didn't exist. And this administration has acknowledged it, but has refused to do anything about it. We are moving at a snail's pace to make the people of Chicago safe, and how dare us do that to the people who we are supposed to represent. Listen, I pushed the legislation and helped it get over the finish line in Springfield to speed up the timeline on the removal of these lead pipes, but the city still has not done enough. We need to put the city into triage zones and figure out how we move our lead pipe removal forward. Secondly, the city has told residents that this is their issue and they need to find a way to pay for it, or at least to pay for some of it. No, the reason we have more lead service lines than anywhere in the country is because up until 1986, it was the law in Chicago that you had to build that way. That's on the city. The city has to do better. I've also talked about making sure that we can look at this lead pipe issue and create a massive jobs program for the young people in our community, find ways to help them be part of the middle class and be a part of the solution. And it also is, to me, ridiculous that pregnant women, that daycare centers, that schools still have lead pipes, and we need to make sure we speed up the process so they can get the help first.
Thank you, sir. Alderman Sawyer?
Yes, we have to do it on multiple levels. One of the issues, one of the challenges is obviously it costs billions of dollars, but we need to get past that and find a way to get the money, whether we bond for it or seek our partners in assistance. It's a both-and approach. Two, we want to make sure that those that want filters and want things, till we can fix those pipes, please take advantage of the service that we do have now. You can get filters, you can get tested so that we'll know the levels and we can get a better understanding. Three, we want to make sure that we are separating the people that are able to pay, people that are unable to pay, people that have challenges. We want to make sure that we get this done as quickly as possible because it is a difficult challenge, but I think we're up for that challenge. We just have to make the commitment to get the money, to secure the financing, to get these pipes replaced and replaced quickly because our children's lives are at stake. We have to do better.
Right. Mr. Green?
100%. It makes no sense that we have, you know, 380,000 lead service lines, and the mayor over the last 4 years, I think I've only changed like 400 of them. It's insane because we got children all throughout the neighborhoods that are drinking lead water, and we don't know the effects long term. So one of the things that we must do, one of the first things we would do in our administration is we will make sure that we have a fully funded Department of Environment. That's one of the things we must do. We also must prohibit lead service lines in this city. We also must make sure that every person has access to a filter while we are moving this plan forward. And then, you know, I agree with my colleague, and I think that I want to work with him while he's in the state to move forward some money for this, to make sure that we have a massive jobs program. This is important. You know, I've been pushing this as well on the campaign trail. Think about, you know, the pipeline to middle-class jobs that we can have by changing the lead, the 380,000 lead service lines that we have in this city. This is a real unique opportunity to invest back into the communities and create real growth in people and in communities. So that's one of the things that is a priority of our administration.
Alderman King.
Yeah, so when you go to drink a glass of water, which is one of our most precious commodities, like our air, you need to have some assurance that you're putting something good in your body. The devil is in the details here. We actually just need the political will to come together with collaboration because there are a lot of details here. New Jersey changed all of their lead pipes within a year. But what it took was political will and collaboration, because in order to do that, and we have to do the same thing here, there has to be some legislation change. For instance, we need legislation that will allow the city workers to work on private property, because the lead lines are going into private property. And to get that from every single landlord is difficult. So you have to pass a sweeping legislation to change that within the city. We also need the same type of legislation that would allow private funds to be used on public property. Those are things where we need to work with the state and with the city in order to do that. So we have to do that and then have the political will. Again, you know, one of our most precious commodities, we have to put that as a priority. This administration just hasn't done that.
Now, on to our closing statements. You each have 1 minute, but we're going to ask you a specific question for your closing statement. Okay, we're not going to talk about public safety or crime right now. Other than that, give us 1 minute on what your top priority is in City Hall. Alderman Sawyer, we're going to start with you.
Thank you. And I spoke about it earlier. My top priority in City Hall is resetting government operations. When you decide to make a decision to live in the city, you want to become a Chicagoan, there's certain expectations that you had. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, streets are nice. You know, we have water that we just talked about. You know, there's certain basic services, police protection, that you expect us to have. Right now, we're working on an archaic system where we have a city charter that has not been updated in decades or maybe even scores of decades. It's crazy. And when you talk about that, it's like talking about having a constitution and all you have is the Bill of Rights. We need to update our government structure. We need to do better with our 311 system, make it updated so that calls no longer have to go two places in order for them to get served. Currently, they go to the alderman and they go to 311. Makes no sense. President of the city council should not be the mayor, and I can talk about this on and on, and I see my time is up, but that's resetting government structure is my top priority.
Mr. Green, you have 1 minute.
Well, my top priority is to make sure that every young person in this city has the opportunity to become whomever they want to be. That's the biggest reason why I'm running, is because young people are hopeless in this city. Young people, if they get an opportunity to leave or if they go off to college, they don't want to come back to Chicago. And I'm raising three boys right now, and I'm fearing for the future they will have in this city. So I'm running to make sure that every young person in every neighborhood in the city of Chicago has the opportunity to grow and thrive. Starting early, we should have a universal 3K where three-year-olds are starting in schools, making sure that schools have programs throughout the day, trade, tech hubs, making sure that we have apprenticeships for young people year-round. Every young person should feel like Chicago is youthtopia, that there's always, always an opportunity for them to become better and to be productive and go out and change society. Our kids are smarter than Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, and we're going to make sure that we show the world
thank you, Mr.
what
Green.
Chicago youth are.
Alderman King.
Yeah, so other than safety, as I mentioned before, I think education is our next top priority. Obviously, collaboration through all of the priorities, but education. If we don't have a safe city and we don't have schools that people can go to, our city is going to continue to decline in enrollment in places that we need, in places that we need population the most. So uplifting teachers would be a part of that. Again, there are two professions where we throw everything at that we're unable to solve, teachers and police. And so we need to support both of those. Youth engagement would be part of that. Again, K through 12, there's no reason why we can't have co-curricular after-school programming. Bringing the trades back to the schools in a meaningful way to give and prepare our children for the jobs of the future. And also, again, expanding selective enrollment schools. A lot of kids do not get in those with a strong neighborhood component so that we can, again, attract people to stay in the city and to come back to the city.
Representative Buckner.
Yeah, thank you. John, you said in this answer that we shouldn't talk about public safety or crime. I just want to be very clear. Crime is not a disease. It's a symptom of a disease. And that disease is a lack of investment in public safety. Public safety isn't the Chicago Police Department. It's CPS. Public safety is CTA. Public safety is CHA and our libraries and our parks. It's building an apparatus that can give our young people a quality of life and options to not be involved in a life of crime. Listen, Daniel Burnham said makes no small plans. And unfortunately, too many people in this race have made no plans at all for the people that people in Chicago who really need help right now. We deserve more. My campaign is predicated on making this the best city it can be, not a former version of Chicago, but the city that Chicago has always deserved to be. And together, we can do that. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates. Thank you, audience. Thank you, Patty and Santita.